everybody. It's Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me on I Don't Care with, of course, me, Kevin Stevenson. Great to have you today. You know, I'm really excited about my guest today. Not only is she a good friend from here in Waco, Texas, but Sophia has got a wonderful story to tell. So my guest today is Sophia Strother Lewis. She is a survivor, an author, and an entrepreneur. Sophia, how are you doing? Welcome to I Don't Care.
Thank you so much. I'm doing well, and I'm living a life of I don't care right about now. So it's right. Perfect timing right here.
Perfect.
Literally.
That's perfect timing.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's just jump into, you know, and I told you beforehand, you know, I just want you to tell your story, you know, however much or little you want to tell, but just to enlighten my audience about how you go about helping survivors find identity after a crisis situation. So please, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Kevin. And again, it's truly a pleasure to be on your show today to just share a little bit of my healing journey. But to give context to the listeners and viewers, my abuse started when I was 9 years old. I was an only child. My parents did not go to church, so there was no kind of outside influence there. But my father and my mother had succumbed to crack cocaine in the late 80s, early 90s. And they were professionals, and they just went from being, he was an engineer and my mom was at LVN. And unfortunately, those drugs are something else. And as a result, my father at the age of 9 started to sexually molest me and carry on a relationship with me for about 2 years while my mom worked. So he utilized that opportunity. Unfortunately, I guess it's fortunate. When I was about 13 years old, he decided to leave my mother temporarily, get off of drugs. And as a result, he had a withdrawal seizure behind the wheel and ended up going into 12,000 gallons of gasoline at Mobil gas station in Springfield, Massachusetts. And he died fire when I was 13 years old. And I always preface that major incident for me because people would think, oh my goodness, up to that point, your life was probably terrible being, you know, sexually abused by your father. But to be honest, that actually was the catalyst for my mom because my mom could not cope. That had been her love since 14 years old. She had been with my dad. And when he passed away untimely at the age of 39, my mother's drug addiction was next level. And she then moved to Texas. We moved to Marlin, Texas at that, a small town outside of Waco. And she started to groom me for trafficking. And she became my pimp. Unfortunately, in Marlin, she trafficked me in Marlin and in Waco. From the ages of 13 to 15 years old. And in that time frame, I had a child while I was being trafficked by one of my mom's drug dealers at 14 years old. And, you know, you would think that for me, that was it, because all I knew from 9 to literally 15 years of age was sexual violence. My grandmother, God rest her soul, I was born and raised in Springfield. And so I called for her. And I said, you got to get me out of here. I'm going to end up dead or a prostitute. And she sent for me October 21st, 1995, to go back to Springfield with her. And she really instilled in me a sense of accountability, responsibility. She gave me a business mindset. I've actually been on my own since 16, graduated high school, bought my first home at 20. I've owned a business since 21, got a master's in a bachelor's and a master's degree, all because she really, really pushed me. However, because of the fact that I did not have a premise of what love was, of standards, of dignity, I then entered a phase of my life of making a lot of decisions in a hurt place. So I was in domestic violent relationships. So I probably was on and off in violent relationships for about 10 years. And then when I thought I was out, you know, I'm successful in my career. I'm doing some great things in Waco with UT Family Fun Day. I brought Martin Luther III here in East Waco, just really trying to do some impactful things, working for American Heart Association, just whatever I could find myself to do. But unfortunately, in 2021, I was kidnapped, tortured, and raped by an illegal citizen from Nigeria. And that started my more recent 2.5 year by the time the trial got done last year, of really trying to figure out who I was. Like, I thought I was a strong, healthy survivor because I do trainings all over the place, I speak. But that incident completely triggered everything from my past as if it had happened yesterday.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. And then it just made me second guess. Like, so what is this? Like, is this going to be an ongoing thing where all I do is experience sexual trauma? You know, how do I really find that vigor and enthusiasm for myself? How do I deal with survivor's guilt or the shame? Just so many different things started to resurface. And I was seeking justice, which so many survivors, they don't get to that point. And rightly so, it's a horrifying experience to go through. And it basically strips you again of your identity because you have to come into contact with systems and retell the story.
Tell the story multiple times to the courtroom.
Yes, you do. And I mean, I actually have a PowerPoint. I train law enforcement and healthcare and prosecutors now. And I actually have my case from the time I actually made my first outcry to, I was a part of Bear with Scott and White at that time, past tense. And so my first initial was an outcry to a healthcare associate. And then it was a therapist. And then I went to the police department. So it wasn't a trajectory of straight to the police department. But even in that, it just, so many ways that I feel I was failed on so many different levels. And I think my spirituality is really what kept me. And I did have a decent support system. But trust me, it was definitely very, very low times in the last 2.5 years.
I can't imagine what you went through, but I'm guessing, you know, like you said, this just triggered it. And you know, you probably, and I'm putting words in your mouth, I don't mean to, but you probably thought, here I go again. I'm in this cycle. What in the world? What did I do? And then you start blaming yourself. What did I do to make this happen?
Yes.
I can't imagine that. Yeah. So talk a little bit about the most recent trial. What's kind of come of that?
Yeah, so we had the trial started November 13th in Williamson County, and it lasted about 4 days. I was on the stand for 4.5 hours. The jury came back on November 16th with a guilty plea, and the prosecution immediately asked for him to be remanded into custody while we await trial, because we found out that he was also convicted by the federal government of being a part of a 7-person Nigerian money laundering scheme in Houston. And he was given 8.5 years for that case. But unfortunately, he was let out in 2 years because he became an asset for the federal government. And so I don't know what this judge was thinking. He was a visiting judge. He basically said, well, you know, we're going to let him be free because his lawyer said that he has a baby due on December 1st. I mean, you couldn't have bought people in the courtroom for a dime. Like, it was like he was just convicted of a second degree felony, aggravated felony, for kidnap, torture, and rape. And we're going to let him go free because we want to, you know, appease him. And of course, he never showed back up for the sentencing on December 14th. They still gave him 10 years, but he is currently on the run. And I've been working with the Lone Star Fugitive Task Force through the because he is wanted on the federal side now, too, as a result of my state case.
Okay, so you put yourself out there, going to the police, going through the trial, you know, having to relive all of that, and this happens. How do you justify that? How do you rectify that with yourself? I mean, again, you know, you feel like, you know, you've done it right. You've gone through the process. You've been some of the, you know, like you said earlier, few sexual assault victims even want to pursue it because they want to forget about it.
Right.
You did it right. You know, the case was presented well, obviously. He's found guilty. And yet you're like, where's my justice?
Yes. Yeah, that's the question I continually asked myself, because there were various different things that were happening, even leading up to the trial, where it seemed as though he got more rights than I did. And I was even more perturbed because he wasn't even a legal citizen. So now on top of everything, that was insult to injury, that somebody that's not even born and bred here, not even a legal citizen, had more rights than someone that's born and bred here, pays good taxes as an entrepreneur, I might add, and still did not have, you know, proper protections, or just for them to see me. And I think the end of December was a very dark place for me. For about 2 weeks, I would not come out. I did not want to engage in any activity. I didn't want to talk to anyone. Like, I really needed to do some soul searching for me, because I really felt like I'm just not worth it. Like, obviously, any and everything that I've done leading up to this point is for what? Because I'm not even seen or recognized in this process. And then how am I going to go about my daily activities knowing he's free?
I mean, my gosh. I mean, I would think you'd be, you know, frightened, terrified. I mean, this guy's gonna come after you.
Yes. Yeah, and even to the point, like I said, I own one of my companies, L2E Industries. I have a contract with Amazon. And so I have a fleet of about 40 vans, a staff of about 100 in Austin. And, you know, I was walked away. Like, I'm just like, yeah, I'm good. Like, no, I really realized with my identity, I think what kept me, and this is to survivors that may be watching this, a lot of our depression comes from the fact that we are grieving who we used to be before the incident. And for me, I was the glass half full. I was very vivacious. I was enthusiastic. I'm ripping and running, always trying to do. And I found myself becoming a recluse, ostracized from family and friends. I didn't do a lot of social gatherings like I used to do. And so I was grieving the Sophia I once knew. But I had someone tell me I'll never be that person. And so I had to realize who I was now. And I really had to gravitate to the fact that I had to own, I was courageous enough to come forward. I was brave enough to put my story out there. I was cohesive enough to still maintain, and even how I met you, that my incident had happened when I met you, but what was my main goal? Putting on something for the community, helping others need, because for me, that was my healing. That was how I was able to have just a portion of my old self, which was the servitude side of me. And that's actually been kept me grounded. Almost every single career that I've ever had has been one in a servitude industry. I'm trying to help others in some capacity. And that's really how I managed to get through the immediate detriment. And plus, I said, he can't own no more of me. I gave him enough with my fear. I gave him enough with anxiety. I gave him enough with my health issues after this. I refused to be the walking dead. And that's what allowed me to continue to say, I'm going to live. I'm not going to be dead while I'm living. There's no such thing. And so that rebelliousness is really what allowed me to kind of get out of that funk that I was initially in.
Okay. So how do you, you know, we're talking about helping survivors find identity, and you know, you're still working through that, obviously, but what do you say to someone who is a survivor of sexual abuse or trafficking or something like that? How, you know, you've been there, you know what they're going through. What do you say to them to help them? I don't know if you can ever move forward, but like you said, you know, start again, maybe. I don't know how to phrase that.
So first, I first and foremost say, I understand where you're at, wherever that place is. I've been somewhere on that spectrum, but I also understand you can't stay where you're at, wherever that spectrum is. And so one of the things that I do help, and this is a part of something that I've just recently rolled out that I'm doing instead of Juneteenth Family Fun Day this year, it's called Learning to Exhale. And, it is a restoration philosophy that helped me. It's a three-phase approach that allowed me to stop and catch my breath, that allowed me to really assess who's around me, my circle, my finances, what I really want for my future, my faith. And then I really started proclaiming what I am even before I was there. And so there's different things where you can provoke manifestation. So now what I'm doing, I'm actually putting on these two-day symposiums that encourages survivors and advocates and community to come. And the first day, we just talked about a lot of things introspective. I did equine psychotherapy where I went out to the ranch and worked with horses. It was profound for me to deal with when I first had this with Wild Hope, which they provide those services for survivors of sexual assault. And then I also had a traditional therapist, Cheryl Alexander, out of Round Rock, that I could go to in between because she really helped me identify my personality and where I am now through the Enneagram. And then she also allowed me to get some practical coping mechanisms and just that kind of reality talk. Like, you know, Sophia, when is enough going to be enough? She allowed me to assert that I had more power and control than I thought I had after losing it, being victimized. And so between those two mechanisms and then my faith journey, that really allowed me to start getting the stepping stones and the blocks. And then if I wasn't having a good day, I'm just not having a good day. And, you know, I had to be okay with not being okay. And I think so much of the problem, especially with women and men survivors, society kind of frowns upon the vulnerability or that weakness. Well, you're not over it yet. Or like, why aren't you done yet? Or, you know, it could have been worse. Like we say things like as if whatever happened to me is not egregious enough. It could have been worse. Doesn't make it okay.
That's not the thing to say.
Right. So really with the symposium that I created with that first day, they're able to really kind of do introspective. How do I see my finances? Because a lot for those that have been trafficked, being empowered to financially be able to take care of yourself is huge. And then we deal again with the emotional, mental, and then your physical health. And then on the second day, I've been able and privileged to partner with Magnolia, Creative Waco, and Baylor University to provide a full day workshop on filmmaking, acting, screenwriting, because it's a way, that was another way, because me and my daughter wrote a movie in 2021 as a means of me coping with this. It's called Love You to the Moon. Performing arts has always been a part of my sustainability from young age. I got into it because it allowed me to create another narrative. It allowed me to be somebody else for a moment. It allowed me to have control with as the author with the pen or the actress with the talent. And so I'm bringing this, I'm actually traveling all over the place, bringing these resources so that survivors and advocates and community can understand the value of being able to create a narrative. And that is a part of a healing journey that can really help survivors that never come out, because they may never come out, and that's okay too. For those that never are able to seek justice for whatever reason, this allows them an alternative to being able to get that story out or to create a whole new narrative that can be a part of their healing.
Okay. Hey, was the movie ever produced?
So we got it produced. We was able to get a teaser out of it, which is actually available now. It's had over 50,000 views. Great reception. And we're in the process of finishing up getting the rest of the budget so that we can actually produce a full feature film. We already have the production company that signed on to sponsor, giving us little to no cost, which I'm so ecstatic about. So once we get that final 25,000, I believe it is, then we're going to finish it. And it's going to be an actual trilogy. And I'm just excited that it's another way for me to show survivors and everything that I've done between being an entrepreneur. That means you can be, get your own business. I became a realtor because that's another livelihood that those that have been trafficked or sexual assault can do. That's low entry that you can get into to show that you can purchase a home or to help those. I helped three people close on a home on Monday that work for my company that would have never normally been able to be homeowners. And so it's been a way for me to show survivors by actually doing it. We call it modeling the way. And this is just another opportunity outside of my philanthropy, because Juneteenth Family Fun Day is done through my nonprofit, 100% philanthropy work that I do. I actually even had medical clinics that we opened up, mobile medical clinics during COVID to go into Black and rural areas. So everything that I'm doing is like, hopefully you see that you as a survivor too can really accomplish whatever you set your mind to.
and that there's people that may not know you, but they want to help you. I'm one of those. May not know you, but I'm here to help.
Man, that's great. So if, you know, there's somebody in my audience, and I guarantee you there's going to be somebody that's faced a lot of what you've faced, how could they get in touch with you to maybe, you know, attend one of your seminars or hopefully see your movie, whatever it comes out? How can they get in touch with you?
Yes. So I am on social media. One, my website, sophiastrother.com. Or they can reach me on Instagram, which is _Sophia's Back or Sophia_NotCurrency. Those are both my pages. I'm also on Facebook as well as Sophia Strother Lewis under my name. And then they can also, I'm also on TikTok as well with Sophia's Back, and that's with two S's. So they can reach me any platform, or they can simply Google Sophia Strother.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that if somebody Googles you, Sophia, they're going to find you. I
mean, yeah, they'll be able to see just one, how they can get a hold of me, but they can also see other philanthropy-driven or community good causes that I'm involved with, that if they want to volunteer for some of these causes, if they just want to be a part, again, if they want to participate in the symposium that we're going to be doing in Waco, we're going to actually look to host two of them this summer, July and August, so that we can capture as many individuals as possible to participate. They can also do that. And again, we welcome for survivors. It's free. We don't charge anything for survivors because we want them to come and be a part of gaining how they can take over their life again.
Wow. Okay. You got one last thing you can save. What's that going to be?
You're more than enough. I think that's one of the biggest things that I battled with, because I did ask the question, Kevin, that you mentioned earlier, why me? What did I do? And sometimes it's actually funny. I just got a revelation in the middle of the night about Job. And I kept saying I'm in a Job experience. Like everything has been stripped from me to a certain degree. My parents passed in the fire last year in Waco. It's just so many different things happened on last year alone. And I felt that was a Job experience, but God gave me insight that Job didn't go through for him. It wasn't to prove anything to Satan. It wasn't for him, but he wasn't released until he prayed for his crazy friends and his wife. It wasn't until they got to see what it truly means to have salvation and how good God can be, how he can keep you. And they were also able to witness how he got double for his trouble after he prayed for them. So I look at the fact of everything that I've been through, and it wasn't for me. It's not about why me, it's why not me. And so I'm really hoping and praying that God allowing me to live through these circumstances will help somebody else realize that you can get through it, that there's nothing in and of itself you did yourself, but that your courage and your bravery is bound to inspire and help someone else.
I tell you, my friend, you are definitely more than enough. It is always a pleasure being able to be with you and to talk with you, and boy, Just hearing about your journey and the strength that you exude, you know, being, you know, surviving all of that and really finding your identity mm-hmm. a couple of times over.
Yes.
So, boy, my dear friend, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's been great.
Sophia Strother Lewis, just Google her. You're going to find her. Okay. She's everywhere. She's everywhere here in Waco, and I know on the internet she's everywhere there too. So, Sophia, great to see you again. Great to talk to you. I can't wait to see you in person.
Thank you.
All right, friends. A little bit different episode of I Don't Care this time, but I hope you heard a wonderful message from Sophia, just like I did. So, looking forward to seeing you next time. So, take care.